There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, big show for you on this Friday edition of Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all, Sean Sullivan, live local talk over the next couple of hours, and I'll run down all the guests we have and subjects we're going to talk about today. But first, let's get into the weather story. Our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, has been telling us all week long to expect this severe weather for Saturday, as in tomorrow, and nothing's changed on that. Still calling for it, and even a little bit of chance of like some rain and increased wind happening today. But the main event seems to be from mid-morning tomorrow morning through evening, late afternoon, evening tomorrow. Now, of course, it depends on what part of the listening area you're in. It's moving from west to east. Starts earlier the further west you are. Obviously, later the further east you are. What are we looking at right now is we have some active advisories going on. We have a wind advisory going on. I think that small craft advisory is still in effect. I think I was checking seas earlier, 8 to 10. Maybe higher. I don't know anybody's planned a big fishing trip for tomorrow. I don't think that's going on for anybody. But yeah, so small craft advisory, and then you have the wind advisory, and then you have the thunderstorms and the winds associated with these thunderstorms. We're looking at possible gusts 35 miles an hour out of the southeast. If you have one of these supercell thunderstorms, they're saying it could be more. And also the question about tornadoes is out there, saying a better chance for those thunderstorms that could spin off tornadoes to be more inland than they are down here, but we've seen it before. It can sure as heck happen in Mobile and Baldwin County. But so about 9 o'clock tomorrow morning is when the worst of the weather is supposed to make its way in through the western part of our area. So Mobile County, eastern Mississippi, will get it then, and then throughout the day into the afternoon, making its way into Baldwin County and over into northwest Florida. So damaging winds are calling for maybe up to 70 miles an hour. And think about that. That's significant. That's tropical storm, right? The threshold for hurricane 74. It's not saying that that's going to happen, but there's a possibility. They are calling for gusts up to 35 already. They're predicting that. It's a possibility of tornadoes, small hail, heavy downpours, all possible through the day tomorrow. So I just want to just give you a heads up on that. And some of the ways it's shaking out right now, information we're getting here to our studios. By the way, if you're working with a municipality, you got a school system, whatever, you know, you can always just drop me an email directly, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. If you got closures, those kind of things, we always pass that along. I got a note here, Baldwin County driver's license offices. I know it's a big deal. They're going to have the big opening tomorrow at the satellite offices. They will not open tomorrow. They're moving that until next week. Also, we got the note this morning. Any associated Mobile and Baldwin County public schools, any associated activities, I guess that would be basketball games, but there could be something else that were supposed to happen tomorrow. Those have been canceled. I don't know. We check for the rescheduling, but those have been canceled for tomorrow. So those are two of the things that stand out that have been change for tomorrow, as I'm sure they're just trying to make sure they don't get anybody out and about when the bad weather rolls through. So there you go. And once again, if you have changes or any kind of cancellations or anything for your business or your school system or your municipality, you can contact us. You can call us here at the station, the main line or the studio line, which is 343-0106. In case you don't have it written down, 343-0106. Or you can send an email, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. All right. And we'll check in with Dr. Bill Williams coming up in a little bit. Now let's run through today's show. Coming up on today's show, we talked about this morning some. The GIRL Act right? The GIRL Act legislation that is proposed by Representative Chris Pringle, also candidate for AL1 for Congress. He rolled this out yesterday. He's going to join us in studio at 1 o'clock to talk about what's in this act, what he's trying to accomplish with this. And let me point something out for a second here. Talk about a bias and lean on things. And Mike Kaysen, Mike Kaysen with AL.com, I think, does a pretty decent job. He does a good job of covering state politics, but he may not. So you understand, the people that write stories for a publication like AL.com don't always write their own headlines. A lot of cases, they don't write their own headlines. I don't know what is true here or not true on this. If Mike wrote his own headline or they had somebody else with AL.com up in Birmingham write the headline. But he has a story about what we'll talk to Representative Chris Pringle about, that Gender is Real Legislative Act, the GIRL Act for the acronym. He writes a story about it, and he kind of goes through the story like you normally would, talking about facts, things that are facts, getting quotes from Representative Pringle in there. But the headline is, Alabama lawmaker aims to keep transgender athletes off school teams. Now, it's funny how you would look at something, right? Is it, because I think hearing commentary from Representative Pringle already, he's aiming to make sure girls that are biological girls have a fair chance at competing in athletics. But the headline writer says, Alabama lawmaker aims to keep transgender athletes off school teams. It's just funny how they chose to write that headline. And it might not be Mike Kaysen's headline at all. Somebody might have written it for him. But that stood out to me. We'll talk about that more coming up. Also, coming up at 12:30, Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us from Washington. We'll talk to him about the War Powers Act vote, how he voted, and also a little bit more about what's going on with his new ad. Speaking of AL.com, Kyle Whitmire, one of their editorialists there, has said that Congressman Bradley Byrne, his new Senate ad, is racist. He calls it out as racist. He said that ad is racist. So we'll kind of find out what Congressman Byrne thinks about that. We'll talk to him coming up at about 12:30. All right, so those are items on the docket already. Plus, we'll have a conversation with you at 343-0106. When we come back, I want to run through a couple of headlines, too, that have pretty good news. Jobs numbers look good, although there's some weaknesses in some sectors, but overall, job numbers continue to look good for the country. Also, Dow crossed 29,000 for the first time ever. Pretty heady stuff. But the one thing that got me out of all those pieces of information, story came out today that's not getting the press elsewhere. How about this for a ratio percentage? The cancer mortality rate in our country is coming down, and significantly. And I have details on that great news coming up in just a little bit. That out of all the different stories out today, that's the one that made me smile. Cancer mortality rate dropping in our country. All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:18, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. About 10 minutes away, a little 12 minutes away, Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us from Washington. We'll check in with him right now. Speaking of checking in, across town with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's great, and it's even better news because I'm a fan of y'all's store and y'all's products, but you know, if there's one thing that makes my eye glisten in there, and that is the selection of Open-L knives. And if people have not been in there lately, it is a big selection of Open-L knives.
Well, not only that, yesterday we got our latest shipment, and we have expanded again. One of the things that pleasantly surprised me is how well the kitchen knives went over the holidays. The paring knives and little sets. So we've expanded the kitchen selection, as well, of course, as the Open-L Outdoors, the number 8s, the number 10s. And as soon as we get done talking, I'll post a cool video of all the new knives that we've got in stock here at Mobile Bay Coins.
Now, where do you post that video?
That'll be right there on Facebook.
Okay, so that's coming out. People can check, because there's a couple things. Number one, OpenLs are just different for their locking mechanism. If y'all hadn't seen it, it's really cool. Like Angelo's told us, it's an old design, but it's a great design. But it's not just pocket knives, as you pointed out. I mean, I've given the OpenL sets, kitchen, garden, all that stuff as gifts over the years, and they've been well received.
One of the things that has amazed me is the quality of the kitchen knives. I've given a couple of those sets out myself. And the people that I gave them to don't sharpen them and don't take good care of them. They run them through the dishwasher, which you're not supposed to do, but yet those knives are still holding up. They still look brand new. It's amazing to me.
It's a great quality knife, great gift item, and great to gift yourself with. Give people directions, number one, to come see you in person, and you're going to post that up on Facebook. Tell them how to find you on Facebook as well.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can also find us at MobileBayCoins.com or go on to Facebook. Like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there. Or check us out on Instagram.
Will do. Thanks, Angelo. Have a great weekend.
You too, Sean.
All right. Y'all check those knives out. They're fantastic. Over the last probably 5 years or so, and I still like buck knives and regular lockback knives, but big fan of those open L's. They're great in all kind of sizes. Just really like them a whole bunch. All right. Text line here at 343-0106. Scotty, you're right. As Scotty said about that headline, it's clickbait. And AL.com has gotten awful. Yeah, you're right. They do the clickbait thing. I guess what I wanted to do is, number one, lampoon that horrible headline. Scotty, I wanted, because I think unfair, because Mike Kaysen does if you go through and read the story, he does a journalist's job of reporting the story, you know, factually. But the headline has this angle to it, and I wanted to, I guess, make sure people know when you see that. These little things that I'm just because I work in this business, I'm no genius. I just learned these things over the decades that not always you have headline writers that aren't the people that wrote the story. So sometimes you might see a headline and say, oh, a pox on the house of so-and-so. And maybe it's not their fault. Maybe they, it's out of their control on that. So just not always. Sometimes some publications, they write their own headlines, but most times you have somebody else writing the headline there. So, but we'll get into that. We'll talk about that more coming up at 1 o'clock when Representative Chris Pringle joins us on the show. All right. Oh, yeah, more from the text line here. Thank you. My buddy Jace points out he's not scared. They're not closing. Folks at ProTent, he said, if Waffle House ain't going to close, ProTent ain't going to close. There you go, Jace. Not scared of the unsettled weather. I think you should cancel anything that involves you standing out in the middle of a open field or something, or under a high tree. But yeah, I mean, you can still have a life tomorrow. It just might have to be a life under a roof. All right, I want to mention this story because I don't think it's going to get talked about a whole bunch, because there's so much of, you know, President said this and Matt Gaetz said that and all that, and we talk about that stuff here too. But I saw this and I said, this is the kind of story I think we need to make sure people pay attention to, because it's good news. And I, you know, don't know many families that have not been affected in some level by cancer. And a story from the New York Times comes out, said cancer death rate in the United States sees sharpest one-year drop. Breakthrough treatments from lung cancer and melanoma have driven down cancer mortality overall from 2016 to 2017, spurred the largest ever decline. This is great news. Cancer death rate in the United States fell 2.2% from 2016 to 2017. Story by, how do you pronounce that? KNVUL. Is it Navul? Navul Sheikh said cancer death rate in the United States fell 2.2% from 2016 to 2017, largest single year decline in cancer mortality ever reported. The American Cancer Society reported that on Wednesday. Since 1991, the rate has dropped 29%. Which translates into approximately 2.9 million fewer cancer deaths than would have occurred if the mortality rate had remained constant. Experts attributed the decline to reduced smoking rates and to advances in lung cancer treatment. New therapies for melanoma of the skin, which we all know how deadly those are, have also helped extend life for many people with metastatic disease or cancer that has spread to other parts of the body. Progress has slowed, though, for colorectal, breast, and prostate cancers, however, and the rising rate of obesity among Americans, as well as significant racial and geographic disparities. Here we go, New York Times, likely explain why the decline in breast and colorectal cancer death rates has begun to taper off and why the decrease in the rates of prostate cancer has halted entirely. Well, but I guess the story you didn't tell is over the preceding decade, they dropped the death rate on prostate cancer a whole bunch. So, American Cancer Society predicting that in 2020, there will be about 1,806,590 new cancer cases and 606,520 cancer deaths. Lung cancer kills more people than breast, prostate, colorectal, and brain cancer combined. They said in the last decade, several important advances in diagnosing and treating lung cancer have also helped avert patient deaths. New imaging technologies have allowed doctors to accurately assess the stage of cancer and its prognosis. Less invasive surgical approaches have sped up recovery times. And since 2015, immunotherapy has helped some patients by enlisting their T-cells to kill tumors. And we've talked about that before on the show. And it goes on. And I'm going to put this up on the Twitter feed because it's a really in-depth look at this. But what great news. Great news if we can be dropping the rate of cancer deaths in this country. And also, the article says dropping the rates of cancer diagnosis. But then on top of that, dropping the cancer deaths. You have to look far and wide for a family that has not had something affect their family or themselves in particular from cancer. So I thought that it kind of got lost in everything else going on today, but I wanted to point that out. All right. I want to say big happy birthday to Keith. We'll just make it Keith G. We'll just put that one. Keith, happy birthday to you, man. Friend of the station, great friend of the station, having a birthday today. All right, coming back when we talk to Congressman Bradley Byrne, I want to talk a bit about the War Powers resolution that was voted on. And this has started a lot of chatter, of course, because yesterday we're talking about Mike Lee, right, in the Senate, and his disappointment with the briefing he received from the executive branch. And I defended Mike Lee in saying, listen, this guy, and I know Mike Gallagher just spent 3 hours calling out Mike Lee and also Matt Gaetz, and that's fine. That's the kind of radio station we are. I disagree with him. Now, I can make an argument the other way, and I can side with Mike Gallagher. At the same time, the idea that principle is not worth anything because somebody will say, well, the Democrats don't do it that way. Well, I still believe in principle. Now, I'm not naive, and I am measured in that, but I still believe in principle. I am somebody who is an adherent to that old dusty document, the Constitution, not to any individual human being. Okay, now I know that's unpopular in a day of populism, but the Constitution still, to me, is more important than any of the human beings that talk about it. So you got the War Powers Resolution vote. Now, this is something that's been in effect since 2002, and rightly so, non-binding on the president. Doesn't require a signature. He'll veto it anyway, but it's non-binding. It's just, and do I understand that it is a move here to try to embarrass the president for the Democrats? Sure. But at the same time, down the road, because remember, people get so focused on who's in the Oval Office, that will only be for 4 or 8 years. But there's members of Congress, Lord knows we've seen, that will have 10 years much longer than that. If you are down the road, when it's somebody who's doing something that you don't agree with, and you challenge them on how they're using the executive branch, don't you stand on a lot more solid ground and footing if when the person you like, and does anybody doubt Matt Gaetz's support for President Trump? Really? I mean, he's like his staunchest ally. Matt Gaetz from over in Northwest Florida. He's the Trumpiest of the Trumpy. This is not going to change how he's going to vote down the road or his support for President Trump, but Matt Gaetz is a young guy. Matt Gaetz, unless he would lose an election, has longevity to be in Congress a long time after President Trump is out. So I get what he did, and I also get where Mike Lee comes from on it. But I am not naive to the fact that, yeah, a lot of this is all involved with the fact that the Democrats want to do something to embarrass the president. But even with that being said, do you then subjugate your principle? And if you do that one time, do you do it 2 times? Do you do it 3 times? Once again, if you heard Matt Gaetz and others talk, they don't take umbrage with the president making his move to take out Soleimani. They take umbrage with how far can the executive branch go into entering into a war without consulting Congress. I think it's a fair question to talk about. That is not a pro-Trump. That's not an anti-Trump. That is not a pro-Democrat. It is a fair question in our republic to talk about that. Now, of course, the White House has called the resolution ridiculous, completely misguided. You heard our guest on this morning from the White House calling it out. And I understand that. That's their take on it. But remember, long after there's not a President Trump, right? President Trump, I feel right now with what I'm saying, he wins another 4 years. So, but eventually, President Trump is not there anymore. There's somebody else in the White House. But many of these members of the House and the Senate will still be there. So what about that? Well, the House passed the measure 224 to 194 with just the three Republicans voting in support. Eight Democrats also opposed the measure. That's another interesting angle on it. Votes here in Alabama fell on party lines. But speaking of which, we'll talk to Congressman Bradley Byrne about his vote yesterday on that when he joins us. Coming up next, right here on Midday Mobile, Chris Pringle, Representative Chris Pringle, who is campaigning for the job being vacated by Bradley Byrne. He joins us at 1. Y'all stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And good to check in again with AL1's Congressman, candidate for U.S. Senate, Bradley Byrne, joining us right now. Thanks for your time.
Good to be with you.
And good to have you on as well, because I would say, like, now more than ever, more questions coming out of Washington. But I could probably tell you, have said that back in October, and I can probably say the same thing going forward this spring. So that it might be cliched. But for the latest stack of questions, I appreciate you coming on and talking to folks back here at home. And let's start off with what has dominated some of our discussion this morning on the program and earlier in the show as well. And that is the, do I have the terminology correct, Congressman? Is War Powers Act, or is it, what is that, and what's the right term for it?
Well, there was a law that was passed in the 70s called the War Powers Act, and it attempts to define when the Congress can limit the president's power as the commander-in-chief of armed forces. There's lots of legal controversy around it, but there's that act. The resolution that was brought to the House yesterday was an attempt to use a part of that act that is probably unconstitutional, but that's a bunch of legal mumbo-jumbo. It was really just an effort to try to embarrass the president.
Okay. So, and how did you vote on that?
Voted no.
All right. So you voted no. Of course, we were talking yesterday on the show, talked about over in the Senate, talked about Mike Lee some, but of course, garnering a lot of attention and somebody geographically pretty close to you and support for President Trump close to you, and that is Congressman Matt Gaetz voted the other way.
Yeah.
So what's your take on that?
Go ahead.
Yeah, what's your take on it? Because I've been talking about it, but I'd rather hear, you're somebody who knows the guy. What's your take on it?
Well, Matt has been saying for some time that there needs to be some specific congressional authorization before we do anything in Iran. And I don't disagree with him about that.
Okay.
The difference is that Soleimani was not in Iran. He was in Iraq. And we do have an authorization to use force in Iraq, pursuant to a 2002 authorization. Now, I do believe we should be updating that authorization. I mean, it was done in 2002, and this is 2020, 18 years later. Lots changed. But I think the president clearly had the authority to do what he did. Now, when I finally got that resolution, which I got yesterday morning, now remember, we voted on it yesterday afternoon, and I got it. They sent it to us yesterday morning. So we had less than 24 hours to read the resolution and consider it. That tells you a lot right there.
Mm-hmm.
When I read it, I said, okay, they're trying to use this provision, the War Powers Act, that is almost certainly unconstitutional. But as I read the actual text of it, I said, this doesn't really do anything substantively. It's just an effort to try to attack the president. Because what it says is that you can't do anything in Iran unless there is a declaration of war, or there's this paragraph that says, unless there's an imminent threat against the United States, which is exactly what the president just said was happening with regard to Soleimani, although it wasn't in Iran, it was in Iraq. I'm saying, what changes there in substantive law in this resolution? The answer is none. So this is clearly just an effort to attack the president.
Wait, okay, so and you barely had time with your team to read it. You know, us back in AL1 didn't get a chance to read through it. But it, your take on this is it didn't change anything. It was just rewriting the document, right? I mean, just doing it in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, today he can't go into Iran without a declaration of war, or unless he considers it an imminent threat to the United States. I mean, that's presently the law. This doesn't add anything to it. So why did they go through all this effort to put it on the floor and pass it? It's simply another effort on their part to try to hurt or embarrass the president. You know, that's all we do here now. We don't really do substantive things here now. We just do these little play things for them to do their messaging in the national media.
It's funny, well, not funny, it's sad to hear that, and then maybe more people need to hear, you know, what you're talking about here. Because, I mean, if you stand back and don't know what you just conveyed to us, Congressman, then I go, well, you know, there's an argument to be made. I hear what Matt Gaetz is saying. You know, that down the road, you don't want to have this carte blanche. And I'm somebody who, like I know you are, believes in this system of checks and balances. I mean, we have co-equal branches of government, and that's a good thing to have a governor or a regulator on those, you know, on any individual branch.
Absolutely. And I have said before, if they would bring forth an appropriate authorization of use of military force, I would probably vote for it. But they don't do that. And this thing yesterday was a big zero, which they gave us less than 24 hours to consider. And they obviously didn't even realize that they were triggering a section of that War Powers Act that is almost certainly unconstitutional under a Supreme Court case. So you add all that up, you say, we just wasted some more time so they can have another effort to hit the president. Let's get a little old up here, to be frank with you. Getting a lot old.
Yeah, but it's it goes into almost every conversation out of Washington, and it's, you know, maybe the proxy is this bill or this funding or whatever, but the undercurrent is, yeah, this way, well, maybe this is the way we can bring President Trump down.
Yeah, I mean, we're over 3 weeks after the date on which they passed this impeachment, or these two impeachment articles.
Yep.
We still haven't sent them over to the Senate. I mean, this is just a game in their eyes. This is not serious, substantive stuff. So, you know, I hate to say it, but that's what Washington's going to be about the entirety of this year.
What is the play there? Educate us. So from, you know, Speaker Pelosi hanging on to this, even after telling the country what a clear and present danger President Trump was to our republic, holding these, not getting these to the Senate, And she has to realize by now, I mean, she's not dumb, that Mitch McConnell isn't going to do her bidding. So why? Why continue to hold them off? Where's the get for them?
The get for them is that they get to continue to get up on national news media and talk to their base about how they're doing something about bad Donald Trump. They're going to make sure that Mitch McConnell has to have fair process so that there'll be a fair vote to get bad Donald Trump. That's what all this is about. She never had any chance at all of influencing Mitch McConnell or the majority Republicans in the Senate. I mean, that just wasn't going to happen. Now that is like a fact. It's been said. It is a fact. And Democrats in the Senate begin to say, come on, it's over now. Send it over. And so we do have press reports coming out today. I don't have this officially, that she's actually going to send them over there next week. Now, it takes a vote in the House to do that, because the way the articles get over there is that the House, not the Speaker, but the whole House, has to pass a resolution that appoints the managers for the House. Those are the people that present the case in the Senate. And they're the ones that literally physically take the articles over across the Capitol to the Senate. So at some point, if that's true, we'll have a vote next week to do that. And at that point, it is totally discharged from the House. It is totally the Senate's bailiwick, which is good, because I think the Senate's going to make short work of it, as they should.
Okay, so that timing, because you and I talked about this last time. He's just joining us, talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for U.S. Senate. And you had said, think about this, that you have President Trump coming into the House to give the State of the Union with this still hanging out there. I mean, that was until something's done, that could be true.
That could be true. He could be making his State of the Union address to a House that just impeached him and a Senate that is either in process of trying him on that impeachment or is getting ready to try him on that impeachment. That obviously is unprecedented.
All right. We'll watch this. But the best word, I mean, and you are our best word up there, this is something that's a next week thing. You don't have to guarantee us. I know you're not doing that. You're not in control.
Well, I can't guarantee you.
Yeah, thank goodness you're not in control of that. I get that. But, I mean, what you're getting inside for people to have some knowledge from Washington that's going to be next week.
That's what we're hearing, yeah.
I want to get circle back around to the War Powers Act as well, and because this has been lumped in with this discussion, and you, I think, disambiguated it earlier on, which is good. But the president talked about, hey, I wouldn't have gone to Congress anyway before taking this act because of the leaking. And I don't know if he meant the Gang of Eight or do you believe there are people inside the House and inside the Senate or both that would leak something that critical, a strike on a terrorist like Soleimani, that they would leak it to whom? The media or to the Iranians? Tell me how that makes you react.
Oh, well, I think there are people here that would leak it to the media, if for no other reason, because it draws attention to themselves and be totally, you know, no regard at all for what that would mean for health and safety of our troops abroad. I think there are people here that would do that. So I understand the president's reticence to do that. Now, I do know that the eight have had a briefing. I don't know exactly when it was, but they have had a briefing. The Intelligence Committee, this is Adam Schiff's committee, remember all that, They got a full briefing yesterday. I am told that the Armed Services Committee that I serve on, that we're going to get a briefing sometime in the not-too-distant future. I did get a personal briefing on it yesterday from a staff person at our committee, as much as they could tell me, because there's still a lot that hasn't, there's still some that hasn't come fully out because of these concerns. And here's what the concern is now that we've taken the action. If we put too much information out there, then the Iranians and other bad people can figure out who our sources are. We do not want to compromise our sources for this information, because those sources obviously were very good sources. They gave us very precise, very accurate information. And that was the information that the president relied upon in making the decision to take out the most dangerous man in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, it's something to consider. Yeah, they're not going to... there wouldn't be a fair trial, and usually there's not, for espionage, go on in Iran, so if they... You're saying that if the way we got the information or pieces of that information, your folks are telling you would point back to a certain asset.
We would compromise one or more of our assets, and because they're so valuable for the future, we don't want to compromise anybody. I heard enough in my briefing to give me the confidence that the president had the information he needed, and that it did indeed appoint to an imminent attack, and by imminent I mean very close in time. And so I think the president would have been criticized if he had that information and didn't do what
sure.
he did. So he's damned if you do, damned if you don't, and he's just making the best decision he can with the information that he's got, and I think he made the right decision.
A lot of Democrats have come out in their comments, and they all preface with the I want Soleimani dead too, but, and then they get into it. So it would be interesting to see if the president had not taken that strike on Soleimani when we could like that, and that information got out, would they then be today a whole bunch of them standing up on the mic and saying, I don't know why the president's shirking his responsibility or something like
they
that.
They would have said that, and they don't like the fact that he's going to get credit for taking this guy out, so they're going to figure out some way to be critical of him. You get some of them, they're saying, oh, well, this Ukrainian jet that was shot down by the Iranians, That's collateral damage from what Trump did. Somehow he's responsible for that Ukrainian jet going down. That's nuts.
It is nuts. We come back from the break more on this, because I want to get Congressman Bradley Byrne's take on this and talk a bit about the Senate race as well when we come back on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Talking to AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne and Senate candidate Bradley Byrne at the same time. And I want to get to that in just a second, Congressman. But first, you mentioned before we went to the news break about the accusation, the roundabout accusation made that it's President Trump's fault that the Iranians shot down that jet. the killing everybody on board. And I wonder if anybody's asked this question. Then wouldn't maybe Neville Chamberlain, in a way, be responsible for this? Or we can go back and somehow we can link Genghis Khan to be responsible for what happened in that part of the country and part of the world, and therefore, by proxy, guilty for the Iranian shooting down the jet.
Well, there was an earthquake that same day in Iran. Maybe President Trump was responsible for the earthquake, too. There's just no limit to the silliness that people go to around here. They just seem to go from one silly comment to the next. And, you know, it you try to ignore it, but it gets so outrageous in some of the things that they say that you can't ignore it completely. So we've got to push back and say, no, it's not President Trump's fault that the jet was shot down by the Iranians. The Iranians are responsible for that all on their own.
You know, now with the Iraqis saying they want this delegation from the United States to come to see about moving the U.S. forces out of Iraq, what the plan will be. Do you see that as a real overture? Is that politics? And if that did happen, I mean, it seems to fit in with what President Trump had talked about, is scaling back the U.S. presence in places like Iraq.
Well, you know, President Trump may say, throw me in that briar patch. You know, that's what he wants to do. I don't think that they're going to want us to completely leave the country. You and I have talked about this before. There's a true need for us to be in that country for counterterrorism purposes, and that serves the Iraqi interests more than it even serves our interests, because, frankly, the terrorist activities that are going to happen are more likely to hit them than they are to hit us. But, you know, if they're serious, if we can't stay in a country that they don't want us in, if they want us to leave and they say, you've got to leave, then we should leave. I don't think they're going to do that, though. I think they're going to want us to stay there in some sort of, equipped, trained, assist-type mission with their counterterrorism operations. But we'll see. We'll see what they really mean to do here. And I believe that there is a little bit of internal politics being played here.
All right. Watching that, I want to shift gears to the Senate primary, of course, going on back here at home in Alabama. And obviously, cliched understatement, you've been busy with that. But you are bringing some of what fights you're fighting in the House of Representatives into the reasoning you're making to Alabamians to vote for you for Senate.
Right. And we've got a new ad that's out there that's become sort of a controversy.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's part of politics and campaigns these days. You can't avoid it. If you think you can avoid controversy in a political campaign, then you, particularly one for something like United States Senate, then you don't have a very realistic view of the world, and you have to accept that before you even get started.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, Kyle Whitmire, one of a few out there that are calling your latest TV ad, where, and I want you to, you know, people probably have seen this, but you can explain it, but he's calling it racist because... he said, I think I'm way paraphrasing here, but the only people you had a problem with, Congressman Byrne, against America are people of color. You picked all people that weren't white-skinned.
Well, yesterday I filed a motion to censor Nancy Pelosi, and I think she's white, so, I mean, I'm pretty equal opportunity about this. The ad is really about this. It starts off with me talking about my brother Dale, who's in the National Guard. Dale served in both Gulf War I and Gulf War II. And it's using Dale because he was my brother, and unfortunately he's dead now. But it's using Dale as sort of a way for me to say, from a personal point of view, these people that wear our uniform, they sacrifice when serving our country. And we dishonor them when people like Ilhan Omar and Colin Kaepernick get up and criticize our military actions abroad. And both Ilhan Omar and Colin Kaepernick did that late last week. Now, we didn't know that when that commercial was made. It's one of those things that they said it in the commercial that came out the next week. But they've been saying things that dishonor men and women that wear a uniform for a long time now. Every time Colin Kaepernick refuses to stand up for the national anthem, he dishonors the men and women that wear a uniform. That's all I'm saying. Now, you know, if you want to make that out to be racist, I don't know how you do that, but you can say whatever you want. I don't care what the color of your skin is. I don't care what your faith is. You should honor the men and women that wear our uniform. And by the way, there are a lot of people that wear our uniform who are African American, Hispanic American, and there are some Muslim Americans that serve in our armed services. And I honor all of them. I've met a lot of them. I know what they're doing. You know, when I talk to them, they don't talk to me about race, by the way. They don't talk to me about religion. They talk about their service, and I honor them for their service.
You know, I think it's... something that is absolutely true as you get further and further outside the Beltway in Washington, that people discuss what people do, not who they are. Now, I mean, there can be pockets. I'm not naive where this, that, and the other, and you go to Hollywood and other places. But generally, when people are talking about other people, just regular folks, they're talking about what that person does, not who they are, right? They do this. This is their job, and they're real good at this. And, oh, yeah, they do this other thing, and they go fishing with so-and-so. Don't you know so? People don't talk about, they don't define the person the way it seems like those in Washington on the left want to do. They just say, here's that person, here's what they do, or don't do.
Right. I mean, you know, we have great athletes who are different colors. We don't talk about their color. We talk about the fact that they're good athletes.
Right.
We have soldiers and airmen and Marine and sailors who are all colors, all religions, and they serve our country honorably and well, and I honor them. We should all honor them. And if these particular people who we've mentioned in the commercial, Elon Omar, Colin Kaepernick, and AOC and the squad, I don't care what color their skin is. I really don't. But I do care about what they say, particularly the ones that are members of Congress. And I do care about the fact we should all be honoring these men and women in uniform, not saying the things that they're saying.
I talk about one thing on the House front, but also on the Senate front, going forward back here at home, and that is this very sad news about Boeing has been, in a way, very good news. I feel weird saying that, but it's been a positive for the business model for Airbus. Airbus just announcing the growth here, more jobs in Mobile. You know, expansion of the air. Obviously, you know, the expansion of their services. But then people keep asking, too, what about the tariffs that are talked about in Washington? People talk about these tariffs, but we're one of those places here at home in AL1 and the state of Alabama that there's a foreign company, but they're putting a lot of Alabamians to work, Congressman.
Oh, yeah, and you can thank President Trump for the fact that they're expanding in Mobile, because when he put the tariffs on Europe, he put the tariffs on completed airplanes over there. So if they build an airplane in Hamburg or Toulouse, it's going to have the tariffs on the completed airplane. But he's not putting the tariffs on the parts and equipment that come over from there to Mobile to be put in our airplanes. And because of that, airplanes coming from Europe cost a lot more than they're going to cost coming from Mobile, so they're expanding to Mobile. We're the winners. Our steel plants are the winners from what he's done to keep China and other countries from dumping steel in America. I've had lots of work with the steel plants in Mobile County, who were suffering because of what countries like China have been doing with regard to their steel. So what the president's doing on trade is actually helping people, helping workers in our area, which is one of the reasons why I've been so pleased to work with the president and his people to work through these things, get them worked out so that we've got things that are very positive for us.
That's a good, I don't know, nuance is right, but in-depth take on this. So you're saying with what President Trump has laid out on the tariffs, there is a economic incentive for these companies like Airbus, the foreign company, to assemble here, not just because all the other reasons they would want to assemble here. There's a economic reason to assemble more jets here in Mobile than in Hamburg or Toulouse.
That's exactly right, because they can sell them to American Airlines, whether it's Delta or whoever, at a lower cost than if they make them over there. So we've gone from 4 planes a month to now we're going to do 7 mm-hmm. A321s and then 4 220s. We'll be making 11 jets a month in Mobile, Alabama, which will make us the 4th largest producer of commercial aircraft in the world. In the world. Thank you, President Trump.
Pretty great stuff. Pretty heady stuff for us back here in AL1. Remind folks, too, outside of AL1 talk, they're looking at your Senate race. They want to get more information, send you, like everybody who's running for office, send you money, send you well wishes, or see where you are going to speak. How do they find that?
It's bradleybyrne.com, BRADLEYBYRNE.com.
All right. We appreciate your time and get back to it, and we'll be watching Washington through your tweets.
All right, Sean. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile.